Welcome to the FTN NBA Podcast with your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Joe Metz. Presented by the FTN Network, this two-man fast break runs you through the best cash and tournament options for every game on today's slate.
The Super Bowl is in the books, and that means it is time for some more NBA action. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the FTN Fantasy NBA Podcast. It is a new week. It is Monday, February 8th, 2021. Just got finished watching the Super Bowl. Not impressed. Obvious circumstances made it less appealing of a game than we thought it would be, but we'll talk about it. We'll talk about some NBA, of course. 8-game slate here on Monday night. Adam Pfeiffer joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Joe Metz. Joe, how's it going, man? A couple weeks now, or what, month or so now into parenthood? How you been holding up, and how was your Super Bowl viewing experience?
Super Bowl was pretty damn boring. I'm sure that's going to be the common theme. Like, I frankly didn't care who won. Would have been nice. I obviously will like watching Patrick Mahomes play, but that team just wasn't the same with the offensive line issues they had. Mahomes' injury, it was just a kind of a shit show game, excuse my language. As far as parenthood, it's 4 weeks as of today, so Sunday. Super Bowl Sunday was the fourth week. Starting to get used to it. I'm pretty much running on E every day now, so I'm kind of getting used to the no sleep, so it doesn't really faze me anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I felt really bad for Patrick Mahomes. As bad as you could have felt for him in a long time, considering how almost easy it's been for him in the NFL. It's just, as soon as he snapped the ball, he was running for his life. And a lot of people are going to say, look at the box score and be like, oh my God, Mahomes is terrible. Like, yeah, he didn't play great, but I mean, the circumstances, like, he played as hard as he possibly could. But yeah, you got to give Todd Bowles credit. You obviously got to give the defense credit, and I guess you have to give Tom Brady credit. He's kind of important. Real quick before we get to the slate, I don't understand why all the last couple weeks there was, if Tom Brady wins this one, he's the GOAT. I'm like, have y'all been?
He already is.
Like, Tom Brady's been the GOAT for a couple years now, guys. Like, and that's coming from somebody who hates going against Tom Brady twice a year for pretty much my entire life as a Bills fan. Like, Brady's been the GOAT. But yeah, Tampa Bay fans, congratulations.
It's fair who won the divorce between Bill Belichick and Tom Brady.
Yeah, Patriots fans are probably pretty sick watching that. Like,
former Patriots.
I was sick in the first half just because, like, I was still kind of in that, oh my God, the Bills were this close to actually playing in this game. Then I got over it, and then watching that as a Patriots fan must have been tough. But this is the end of the NFL season officially, so excited about the offseason. D-Bro and I are going to have a ton of ridiculous content on the Chalk Fade podcast for free agency. We already did a bunch of dynasty episodes, NFL draft. It's going to be sick. So make sure you're subscribed to that podcast. And of course, we're going to have a ton of content at FTN Daily and FTN Fantasy throughout the offseason as well. It's going to be a crazy one. I mean, the quarterback landscape is already crazy right now. Stafford got traded. Carson Wentz will be traded with any day now, it sounds like. Deshaun Watson, Sam Darnold. It's going to be pretty crazy. So buckle up. Joe, let's get to these 8 games around the NBA, starting with Houston and Charlotte. Obviously, the Rockets going to be without Christian Wood for a couple weeks after suffering a sprained right ankle. DeMarcus Cousins got the start over the weekend against the Spurs and was good, not great. You know, 12 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 blocks in 30 minutes. $7,100 for Cousins against Charlotte is a price that I'm still easily looking to pay. In 5 games as a starter this year, averaging just under 30 minutes per game, 14.5 points, nearly 14 rebounds, 3.5 assists, over a block and over a steal per game. Keep in mind, he's shooting 38% from the field in those games. He's shooting a lot more threes this year, which is cutting down his field goal percentage, but Cousins at that price against Charlotte's interior, it's tough not to like.
Yeah, I completely agree. And what makes it even more enticing is the fact that, you know, he's $7,100 on DraftKings. He's $6,000 flat on FanDuel. Obviously going to drive ownership on both sites because of the price. But even if he sees, you know, I don't expect him to see more than, what, 30, 32 minutes. I'm totally comfortable paying for him in this spot. Charlotte has gotten absolutely abused by centers this entire season. but they've also been a team that it has been playing well enough to keep a game close. And Houston, obviously not a team that's necessarily going to blow a team out of the water. So I think DeMarcus Cousins is probably going to be one of my building blocks this season. And I pulled up advanced DVP just to kind of see if it tells us any type of story we don't know already. DeMarcus Cousins has seven archetypes. One of them being bench, obviously doesn't apply to the game today. They are bottom 10 in the league. If you include the bench one, bottom 10 in the league on six of those seven, primary ball handler, stretch big, rim protector, skilled center, rebounder, bench. It's a smash spot. Like he could be $1,500 to $2,000 more, and I would still consider playing him.
Yeah, Charlotte also allows 17.5 rebounds per game to opposing centers. That's the most in basketball. So incredible spot for Cousins. Then you have the guards. Victor Oladipo, 8,100. He's coming off really a bunch of subpar games in a row after getting off to a really hot start once he joined the Rockets. John Wall at 7,400. Like, for me, these guys are so close that, like, if there's a price difference like this, I'm just going to play John Wall for, you know, $700 cheaper. Eric Gordon, this could be a definite Eric Gordon game at 6K. He's been shooting lights out from three lately. Over 40% of the points against Charlotte have come from three, third highest rate in basketball. I talk all the time about how heavy of a zone defense they are. I like Eric Gordon here as my third favorite play. He's been really good lately. His minutes have been up, even with the backcourt healthy. He's still been playing 30-plus minutes each game. So I think Eric Gordon's actually my third favorite player from this game behind Cousins and probably John Wall.
Yeah, I don't hate that call at all, especially when you factor in price compared to someone like Victor Oladipo, because frankly, like, Eric Gordon obviously has a lower range of outcomes in terms of floor and ceiling, but I would argue that he's a bit safer in terms of, like, you kind of know what you're getting a little more so than Oladipo, who's been pretty erratic in terms of his production and as of late has not been producing as well as Eric Gordon. So I'm totally fine taking the multi-$1,000 savings with Eric Gordon on that. And I think that's a great call because I don't think he'll be one of the popular Rockets at all. I think he at best be the fourth most popular.
Yeah, I agree. Anybody else stand out though? I mean, Daniel House, 4,400, should play, 27 to 30 minutes, potential upside for more, not a huge ceiling play, but like they've liked what they've gotten from Jayshon Tate this year. And he's been a big part of the rotation lately, or pretty much most of the year after the Harden trade. David Nwaba plays decent minutes, but I'm not going to go to him. Anybody else on Houston stand? I mean, there's the PJ Tucker discussion at 4K. Maybe he, like, the problem
it's
with
so
PJ
hard
Tucker
for me
is
PJ Tucker this year, just because, like, the loss of Russell Westbrook was huge for PJ Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about it last year where he doesn't have a point guard as much. Exactly. Like, John Wall will do that, but not nearly at the clip.
And not to mention, there wasn't a time last year after the Clint Capella trade where the Houston Rockets were playing with a traditional center. It was small ball Tucker at the five, small ball Covington at the five, and that was giving him a lot more rebounding opportunities. Now they have, even though Christian Wood's out, they're going to have Cousins out there for 30 minutes. It definitely helps that he won't have, like, they'll probably play more center, so I guess at 4K, I don't hate it if he's going to play more minutes at center, just because Cousins isn't playing 38 minutes if this game's close. He'll play 33, 34 maybe, but he's not going to play 38. So actually, PJ Tucker, a little bit more interesting than I thought. But I agree. As in a vacuum, last year was a better situation for PJ Tucker for fantasy. What about Charlotte? Devontae Graham didn't play on Sunday with a groin injury. Got hurt in Friday's game, didn't return the second half, didn't play today on Sunday. LaMelo Ball, man, 8,300 on DraftKings is a steep price to pay, even if Graham's out. Thoughts on Charlotte here?
LaMelo Ball is viable. I assume regardless of whether or not Devontae Graham plays, he will still start. You know, prior to us knowing that Devontae Graham was going to be out, James Borrego said he doesn't know who the starters are going to be, which alludes to the point that they probably want LaMelo Ball in the starting lineup. It is steep. I completely agree. And I agree to a point where I feel more inclined to just go with Terry Rozier for 6,300, which is $2,000 cheaper on DraftKings, or $6,100, which is $1,700 cheaper on FanDuel. You know what you're getting out of him. You're going to get a shoot-first player with the chance for a handful of peripherals. You're going to get 30-plus minutes if Devontae Graham sits, and you're probably looking at about 35, 36 fantasy points. At those prices, I'm totally fine with that, and it obviously allows more flexibility in your roster. I think I would lose interest in general in this backcourt if Devontae Graham is active, just because that price with LaMelo is really tough to pay until you see all three of those guards kind of co-mingle and how they split the minutes up.
If Graham's active, I'm playing Gordon Hayward as the top play, and I still like Gordon Hayward arguably as the top play.
Yeah, I was going to say he's still my top play.
It's a great spot for Gordon Hayward. 7,900 is...
I still touch cheap in my opinion.
Yeah, I think it's fair, if anything. But Hayward's been their transition scorer this year. And the Rockets are terrible in transition defense. 22.5 points per game allowed, fourth most in the NBA. They're giving up a 57.5% field goal percentage in transition. That's one of the worst marks in the NBA. And as I said, like Hayward is... Last time I looked, Hayward was top seven. Yeah, he's 5.5 transition points per game, seventh most in basketball, about a 19% frequency rate. So I really like Gordon Hayward here. If... I think I might full fade LaMelo Ball. It could come back to haunt me, but like this is an 8-game slate where he's not priced at like 7K, 75 anymore, where there are still good but some less appealing options. Now he's priced at 8,500 where or 8,300 where there are some really solid options around him and strong ones under him too. Like John Wall kind of projects pretty similar to me if Devontae Graham's active than LaMelo Ball at 8,300.
I think the only way I get to some LaMelo is if Devontae Graham, one, is out. And when I say some LaMelo, if I'm running 10 lineups, I'd probably have two of them with LaMelo. I this is not like a core play for me. It's not someone I get carried away with. And like I said, if Graham's out, I'm frankly significantly higher on Terry Rozier with the price baked in than I am LaMelo on this slate.
Anybody else, Zeller, PJ Washington, they interest you at all?
Zeller does a little bit, especially on FanDuel. You know, he's been really good lately. My issue with Zeller, though, obviously PJ Washington being back, it has taken a direct impact on Zeller's minutes because Borrego wants to play him at the five. And in the last two games, he's seen a total of 41 minutes at center. He's been producing more than a fantasy point per minute. My reservation is the fact that he only saw 19 minutes against Washington on Sunday. Like, obviously, he absolutely smashed them, as any center should. But, like, the lack of confidence in him getting that 25-plus minute kind of drops him down from that, like, cash viability tier to more like a tournament dart throw. Like, he'd still be a preferred option if I'm paying down at center. But I just don't know if I'm going to do that on this slate.
All right, let's go to Washington at Chicago. This game is pretty interesting. It is the second end of a back-to-back for the Wizards, which means Russell Westbrook, good chance he sits. He's not played on the second end of a back-to-back yet this season. However, head coach Scott Brooks said that Westbrook might be available for this game. So if that's the case, against the Bulls, at 8,600, you play Russell Westbrook, and it's one of the reasons why I probably won't play a lot of the LaMelo Ball. I mean, if Westbrook's active... Like, his price has come down because he had that really terrible game, because everybody had a terrible game against Miami the other night. Yep. And then was fine today, or Sunday, almost triple-doubled, 12, 11, and 9, 42.5 fantasy points. But 8,600 against a Chicago team that ranks bottom three against point guards, bottom three against pick-and-roll primary ball handlers, plays that these two teams are both top three in pace. There's nothing to not like about the spot for Russell Westbrook. So at 8,600, I think he's arguably the best play this league.
Yeah, he would be 100% a core play if he plays. And I sound like a broken record because you've talked about it almost every slate that he's been active about how we are seeing remnants of Westbrook before Houston.
But yeah, the only difference is he's not as aggressive offensively because. When he was with the Thunder, his second best scorer for a lot of those games was, Paul George for the 1 year, and then
had Oladipo for a year.
Oladipo for half a year, right. Yeah. And Oladipo was nowhere near as established then as a player. And then he had, you know, Serge Ibaka. So it's like,
you don't have someone like Bradley Beal who leads the NBA.
Bradley Beal's legitimately been the best scorer in basketball this year. So,
correct.
Like, that's the only difference.
Somehow he is still on the outside looking in for the All-Star votes. It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, because the Wizards are bad, but you know, I don't understand why that matters for an All-Star game. But
correct.
Speaking anyway, the All-Star game shouldn't even be played. So
no, it shouldn't. And if you've seen the players' press conferences, they are not happy about it either. I wouldn't be either. Anyways, but yeah, Westbrook, like, we're seeing remnants of OKC, over 30% usage rate, 42% assist rate, just a shade under 1.4 DK points per minute. Like, this is probably the juiciest game on the slate from a DFS perspective. $8,600 gives you the ability to take Westbrook and pair him with someone like a Luka against Minnesota, a Steph against San Antonio. Like, you have the ability with his price to have him as like your second highest spend up, and you'd still be comfortable with the remaining seven spots on your lineup, or six spots, mm-hmm. I guess, if you count the other stud. That's a gift. So I am 100% on board with you about Westbrook being a core play. If he's out, I would immediately just slot Bradley Beal into a core play at 9K flat.
Yeah, so if Westbrook plays, he's like a top three play in the slate. If Westbrook sits, Bradley Beal is the best play on the slate at, what, 8,900? 9K? Like, come on. He is the best play on the slate. With Westbrook off the floor this year, 39.8% usage, 1.57 fantasy points per minute. But Bradley Beal is still an incredible, incredible play regardless at 9K against this defense. So those are the obvious guys. If Westbrook sits, Raul Neto's minimum salary, he's been the starter the majority of games where Westbrook sat. I know he had a four-game absence with a groin injury, but he came back on Sunday. Now, he could potentially sit, too, so keep an eye on that. It was his first game back today on Sunday, played 16 minutes. If they both sit, Ish Smith at 5K becomes obviously viable. Just a lot of moving parts, and they all really depend on Westbrook, but it sounds, you know, Scott Brooks is saying, like, there's a chance he could play. I think you can consider Rui at 5,400, though the minutes were down on Sunday. I've been playing some Denny Advia, but his minutes have been down the last two games. He's been under 20. Anybody else in this team that we should really be talking about?
Not really. I think there you could have some merit to like a Rui Hachimura. You know, he's, regardless of Westbrook's status, he's played well lately. My only concern with him is the minutes volatility. Like, he peaked at 34, 35 minutes early last week, and minutes have started trending in the wrong direction since. He's just cheap enough on FanDuel at $5,200 at a thin, small forward position where he's worth a flyer, and he obviously gets an incremental boost in rebounding potential and scoring if Westbrook's out. So I don't think I would write him off, but certainly not a priority like the backcourt in this game is, or on this team, I should say.
For the Bulls, Lauri Markkanen didn't play on Friday, I think it was. Saturday, he didn't play. Shoulder injury. He's doubtful for this game. In that last game on Saturday, the Bulls started Coby White, Denzel Valentine, Zach LaVine, Patrick Williams, and Daniel Gafford. The Bulls obviously very banged up, still bringing in Thaddeus Young off the bench. Let's start with LaVine. Really, really good play here, 8,900. Again, this isn't a really appealing game. Two top three teams in the NBA in pace, two really bad defenses. LaVine's still dominating the usage. He's taken over 20 shots in three straight games. 8,900 is probably a little bit too cheap for him given the matchup and the uptick in usage with Markkanen out, with Wendell Carter Jr. still out. Talk about LaVine and talk about the Bulls as a whole.
I like LaVine a lot. Unfortunately, because of his price, he's like by default my third option in this game. Mm-hmm. If you want to full stack this game, you can still fit, you know, him, Beal, and potentially Westbrook if they're all active, if Westbrook's active, or, you know, LaVine and Beal if Westbrook sits comfortably, and I would be a big fan of that. So I can't knock the play. I just can't prioritize him over one or both of the Wizards guards. Outside of LaVine, though, like I don't think I would get to Coby White at $6,400. He's just been too volatile.
And I'd rather play Denzel Valentine.
So would I. I'd rather play Denzel Valentine at 48. I'd rather play Patrick Williams at 51. Like there are, without Wendell Carter and Lauri Markkanen, like there are going to be a handful of front court minutes vacated because Thaddeus Young is also shifting and playing so much five. Where I'm more comfortable playing both Patrick Williams and Denzel Valentine than I am Thaddeus Young when you factor their prices in. Like 6'7" is probably the top of the salary scale I would go for Thaddeus Young. But if you look at him on FanDuel, he's center only for $7,200. I just can't stomach that.
Yeah, it's a little scary. The minutes were down on Saturday, but that game was a blowout, so it definitely didn't help. It obviously helps that not only is Markin out, but Otto Porter Jr. is still out. So, yes, he might come off the bench again, but he should play, if it's a close game, 32 to 35 minutes. Uptick in rebounding. We've seen his peripherals have been good. I think all these guys are in play, right? Patrick Williams at 5,100, he'll start, he'll play strong minutes. He's been over 33 fantasy points in two straight games. We mentioned Denzel Valentine, who started. He played 37 minutes that last game, so I'm assuming
he played really well, too.
Yeah, I'm assuming he played a lot of the fourth, but still, like, if he's starting, I mean, Valentine played about 7 minutes of the fourth quarter, so you take away that, he still played 30 minutes, so like he's still in play at 4,800, probably starts again. And like you said, if he's playing more wing and potentially four, could walk into more rebounds. I agree, though, like it's just, even in this matchup, you know, I still don't really want to play Coby White. The usage and stuff is solid with Markkanen and Wendell Carter Jr. off the floor. It's at 25.3%. He's over a fantasy point per minute. It's just, he just hasn't shown a ceiling really this year. And I think he's got a similar ceiling as the guys we mentioned, you know, Thaddeus Young, Patrick Williams, Denzel Valentine. And then don't play Daniel Gafford just because he starts. He'll play like 12 to 15 minutes, especially because Washington can go small in this game and probably will. And therefore Chicago will be able to as well.
Yeah, agreed.
Should be a lot of points scored in this game regardless. Keep an eye on Russell Westbrook's status, obviously, throughout the day. Toronto at Memphis up next. D'Anthony Melton has been a huge part of this team's rotation as of late. He's out for this game with a shoulder injury. Left on Saturday with the shoulder sprain. He has been ruled out. So with this team, they do have Grayson Allen back, but they're going to lose D'Anthony Melton. For Brandon Clark, also out, I should say. He didn't play Saturday with calf soreness, and he's going to be out again. So Gorgui Dieng started in that last game, could start again here. Dieng is currently center only on DraftKings. He's 4,700. I'll start with Memphis. I've been getting to a lot of Ja at his price tags. He hasn't really had a ceiling game a little bit. We've been back to seeing Ja, and I don't even know how much stock to put into it, because remember last year Ja was maxing out at like 31, 32 minutes. Wasn't really getting those 35, 36-minute games. That's happened to him a lot as of late, but a lot of these games have been blowouts for Memphis.
I think it's more,
they could get blown out here, especially shorthanded against Toronto, but that price is tough to pass on Ja Morant.
Yeah, I completely agree. Anytime you get Ja Morant in the mid to low, you know, $7,000 range, there is a ridiculous amount of room for a ceiling game. It's really just dependent on game flow because, like you said, his minutes, you know, before his injury, before like the whole COVID mess with the Grizzlies, he was up in that 34, 35 plus minute range. It's been a product of almost bad luck. Like you look at last game, it was a 9-point game. He did see over 30 minutes, but the game before that, they lost by 12. Game before that, they lost by 18. Game before that, they won by 31. Like game before that, they won by 20, or excuse me, 17. These games are not competitive, and with D'Anthony Melton and Desmond Bane, those are two bench guys that have been playing really well for this team. If they're playing that well, you have a little more confidence taking John Morant out with a lead and getting those guys some more run. Obviously, D'Anthony Melton out in a blowout could still give some incremental run to John Morant, but I do see that going more towards Grayson Allen, Desmond Bane, Tyus Jones. Nonetheless, he would be my starting point. I like Gorgui Dieng. I just wish he still had the power forward eligibility. And I expect to see a good chunk of him, and I would probably expect to see him start again. I do really like Joval again. He had a really solid game from a permanent standpoint.
Yeah, we got to talk about Joval because I forgot to even lead with that. His first game back from the health and safety protocols, came off the bench, played 24 minutes.
Put up 23-7 in those 24 minutes. And, I mean, New Orleans is a pretty respectable front court. Obviously he came off the bench, so he probably saw a good chunk of Jackson Hayes, but he still saw a mix of Steven Adams in there. I can't remember if – oh, it, no, Jackson Hayes – or Steven Adams was active. Never mind. I like Joval at his price on FanDuel in tournaments at 6,700. For 7,200 on DraftKings, I would probably want to hear ahead of time, one, that he's starting, and two, that they're – either isn't a minutes restriction or there is like a loose cap around 30. Because if there's a loose cap around 30, you can basically proceed with Valanciunas as normal because you know like he kind of struggles to get there anyway. So that would essentially allude that there is no minutes cap for him. The rest of this Memphis team is just kind of a toss up to me. You know, if you are deep hunting for value and you think that Desmond Bane will get some extra run over Grayson Allen in D'Anthony Melton's spot, I don't hate it, but he did take an immediate hit to minutes as soon as Grayson Allen returned. So I kind of just want to shy away from the rest of this team, even like the Xavier Tillmans and Kyle Andersons, and just look elsewhere outside of those top two guys.
Let's go to Toronto. What the hell are we doing with Chris Boucher?
What the hell is Nick Nurse doing with Chris Boucher?
I knew he was going to get an uptick in minutes against Brooklyn. It made so much sense. They weren't playing DeAndre Jordan many minutes. They didn't have another center behind him, so they're playing Jeff Green at the five a lot. That's a matchup where you can play Chris Boucher plenty of minutes. He played 27 minutes and, per usual, was very efficient, 32, almost 33 fantasy points. And against Atlanta, he plays 33 minutes and goes for 29-10 with two blocks. I mean, he's at a price where it's like, okay, 5,400. If he plays 25 minutes, he's gonna go, you know, 8x.
Yeah, I mean, his price, $5,400 on DraftKings. On FanDuel, he's sitting at 5,900. I'm okay with both of them.
It sucks that he's only center eligible on DraftKings too. That happened not too long ago, which crushes him for value.
I just don't like. I'm thinking of the rotations that Memphis would potentially roll out, and how many minutes I can project him for. Like,
I mean, Joval's going to play anywhere between 25 and 32. I would say.
Yep, I'd say Gorgui Dieng is probably going to play around 20 to 22.
Same Xavier Tillman will play 26.
Yeah. The issue though, if Tillman and say Joval comes off the bench, I don't think that caters well
for
Chris
Boucher.
That's bad
for Chris Boucher.
That's really bad for Chris Boucher.
If Jovell's coming off the bench again, I'm probably not even looking to Chris Boucher.
Neither am I.
And Baines, for what it's worth, going into that Brooklyn game, was probable with a groin. Maybe his groin has been bothering him the last two games. His minutes have been down. He hasn't picked up like crazy fouls. It's, you know, four fouls and three fouls the last couple games. But maybe that has had something to do with it too. Like, it'd just be a lot easier if Boucher would just start. I get it. But that's a really good point. Like, if Joval is coming off the bench again, that is very bad for Chris Boucher.
Yeah, and it honestly, like, if there's a situation like that where they would force me to project less minutes for Boucher, it would make me like Aaron Baines more for 3-9 if you want to punt center.
Sure. What about the rest of Toronto? Van Vliet coming off another really good game, up to 8,400 on DraftKings. Lowry at 78, and I believe Siakam's at 79.
Yep. I typically, you know, from a raw upside perspective, I like Van Vliet the most of the three, but with the price bump, it's just easier for me to go down to a Kyle Lowry for 7-8 or a Siakam for 7-9, especially with someone like Russell Westbrook, only $100 more than Van Vliet if he plays, or a Bradley Beal for only $500 more, regardless of Westbrook status. A Zach LaVine, you know, $400 more. Like, those are all those three guys I would all prioritize over Fred VanVleet, which just makes me kind of gravitate towards Kyle Lowry and Pascal Siakam strictly from a price standpoint.
Fair enough. Let's move on to Minnesota at Dallas. D'Angelo Russell didn't play over the weekend with that quad injury that's been bothering him. He's questionable here. Let's start with Minnesota. You obviously have Russell questionable. Naz Reid's been really productive in back-to-back games against OKC. 32 and 39 and a half fantasy points. Took 21 shots in that last game without Russell. Who do you like from this team? Naz Reid does scare me here. 6K is a fair price tag for him in general, but we know how much he fouls. It's like over 5 fouls per 36 minutes. Now he's got to go against Luka and Porzingis, two guys that can definitely get to the line, especially Luka. Thoughts on Minnesota here?
So it obviously depends on D'Angelo Russell. If he's out, I'll go right back to the well with both Malik Beasley and Anthony Edwards. Anthony Edwards has been playing exponentially better since entering the starting lineup. Like, his shooting percentages are up over 10% from both the field and beyond the arc from three. And he does see a significant usage bump. Malik Beasley obviously sees a significant usage bump, close to 30% with D'Angelo Russell out. Secure minutes and does provide a good amount of peripherals. I also wouldn't mind Ricky Rubio, specifically on FanDuel. He's only $4,700. Like, sure, he only played 24 minutes, 20.6 FanDuel points last game. That is with him picking up two fouls in the first 2 minutes of the game. So you factor that in, you can kind of assume that won't be the case against Dallas if D'Angelo Russell sits. For $4,700, projecting him for 25 to 27 minutes, given his peripheral upside, I'm totally fine with that if you want to spend down on one of your point guards. I don't know if I'd go there on DraftKings, however, where he's 5,300.
Yeah, Anthony Edwards is power forward only also on
DraftKings. Yeah, I don't really understand it, and two, I just don't like it. Like, he is a shooting guard on FanDuel. Before he was a power forward on DraftKings, I believe he was shooting guard small forward eligible, or just shooting guard. One of the two, but it's a pretty drastic change.
The Timberwolves in their last game started Rubio, Edwards, Beasley, Vanderbilt, Reed. I have no clue why Anthony Edwards is a power forward and only power forward. It's not like when, like, Aaron Gordon got point guard eligibility, he was only point guard eligible because he wasn't playing point guard. He was handling the ball, but he was still point guard, small forward. I have no clue why Anthony Edwards is power forward eligible. Power forward is usually a weaker position, but losing that flexible, you know, dual eligibility is rough for him. But, like you said, he's been shooting the ball better. He's still shooting the ball a lot. And with Towns and Russell off the floor this year, we know Towns probably won't be back in this game. Leads the team with a 29.5% usage rate, a fantasy point per minute. I like him. I probably won't go to Rubio. I think you could actually consider. I think you could consider punting Jordan McLaughlin if at 3,600 if Russell's out again. Could play 25 minutes.
Especially like leading up to where we are in the slate right now, there hasn't been any screaming. Yeah, and value Rubio
is not playing huge minutes, foul trouble or not. Like, they haven't really, when Russell's
He would not be a 30-minute player, regardless. Like, foul trouble or not, he will not hit 30 minutes.
Right.
The other play, quick on Minnesota, Jared Vanderbilt started last game, only saw 18 minutes, picked up three fouls. I just don't like, I looked at his game log, so he played the first 5 minutes of the first quarter, first 5 minutes of the second. He played 9 minutes in the third quarter, and he didn't touch the court in the fourth quarter. I was a little more bullish on Vanderbilt when I saw him step in the starting lineup. He got completely disappointed. If he starts, like, do you see that changing, or would that last game completely scare you off?
I just think he's kind of been locked in. Like, even the game before that, he played 21 minutes. Like, he seems to be somebody that they don't want to play more than, like, 25 minutes. I probably would just avoid it, honestly. Dallas, you want to play Luka? Feel free. He's really good. Don't really have anything else to add.
And the matchup, like, this matchup could not get better.
Right. It's honestly more interesting to talk about Porzingis at 8,400, who's been fine, been good. 8,400 in this matchup, I'm okay with it, I think. I think this is, like, right at the price where I'm like, okay, I'll still play him, but this is getting close to where I'm, like, not too interested. What do you think about Porzingis, though?
I'll back up a sec. I think he raw upside is probably one of the top two plays on the slate.
He's always interesting too because like nobody really plays him.
I was going to say this, unlike last season where he was perpetually, it was either him or James Harden for the highest owned stud on the slate. And I think that was probably consistent across almost the entire year. This hasn't been a season, especially on DraftKings. FanDuel, he's been significantly owned, but that's obviously because you're forced into playing 2 point guards. And the way that your roster construction, you have $10,000 extra for one extra spot. You just have so much more ability to spend up and not really be penalized for it elsewhere. But on DraftKings, like, it seems like people have been opting for balance more. And frankly, I feel more comfortable with that on this slate with those, you know, upper to mid-tier range plays we've already discussed. With that said, if I was going to spend up for a stud on this slate, I think it would be Luka, if not Giannis. 11K is a completely fair price for him. Giannis is just $100 cheaper, which makes me like him more. But
the fact that he plays for the Milwaukee Bucks, but go on.
That's also very true. trying to keep biases out of the podcast.
Don't worry, I would rather play Sexton over Luka too, so I get it. I'm just kidding.
I'm gonna phone a friend and call Gross quick.
he was too busy, dude. Real quick. If you so we all know Josh Gross is the tennis goat. We know he's the
killing this man.
He is the tennis goat, and yet you want to know how we know he's a tennis goat other than the results? Dude's tweeting about these tennis matches and these like advanced like matchups and takes during the Super Bowl. I'm like, that's Josh Gross, man. Like that's him.
Yeah, like this guy. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now.
During the Super Bowl, like
between Super Bowl, like he has a tweet between Super Bowl tweets, disgusting performance from Angie Kerber. Like, who on his timeline knows who Angie Kerber is? That's how deep, like, he's so invested in it, but it makes him so much money, where you have to respect it.
And,
anyways, I just want to talk about you because Colin Sexton, you're welcome.
And it makes the subscribers of FTN Daily money.
Very true. Very, very true. But yeah, I mean, my issue, like, while I probably won't personally prefer to spend up for Luka, I can't really find a knock against someone wanting to do it in this matchup. I would just personally, like, if I want Minnesota, or excuse me, Dallas exposure, I'll just go down to Porzingis.
Yeah, Minnesota allows the second most post-up points per game, too, at 7 per game, so that bodes well for Porzingis. Anybody else on Dallas? I mean, Richardson's at 5K. He's got an okay floor, but the ceiling's really not there. The minutes have been solid. And then you have, like, Dorian Finney-Smith, who, at 4,300, will play 35 minutes in a close game, like we saw the other night. You could talk me to Dorian Finney-Smith in a good matchup at 4,300 and hope he walks into some rebounds and some threes.
Yeah, I think he's a perfectly fine price. I do think if James Johnson misses, that opens up a little more playing time for him, which is making me like him a little more, but I don't have an issue with him regardless.
Golden State at San Antonio. Steph Curry. Whew. That guy's good.
He legitimate MVP candidate. If they get, I will argue.
They got to be, they got, where do they have to finish in the West for him to get?
I'd say 5 or better, which is, it's going to be extremely difficult. But if he can get Golden State to a 4 or 5 seed in a conference with both LA teams, Denver, Utah, who's playing out of their mind, like Phoenix, like this is, that would be some feat. And I think he would be worthy of the MVP award.
He's just dominating the usage right now. We know Draymond's not shooting. It's Wiggins, Curry, and Kelly Oubre taking all the shots for this team. 10-3, it's where he should be. Now, on this slate, especially if Westbrook's in, Curry's going to be overlooked compared to normal, I would say. Like, Westbrook, LaVine, and Beal all in that same game are 9K or cheaper. And what will probably be the most appealing game for fantasy due to the pace and the defense is playing in that game. So I think you're going to get Curry. You can get him at, like, we'll see what Kyle Murray has on Monday afternoon, but, like, sub 10%.
I was going to say sub 15, but, yeah, sub 10% would be even better.
Yeah, I would say definitely sub 15 unless we get, you know, news that, like, you know, somebody sits like Wiggins or something like that. But it's hard to argue playing against him right now. He's hard to argue against playing him.
Against playing him, yeah, I get it.
He's absurd.
You know who else is playing out of their mind right now for Golden State is Draymond Green. And I like, he is going to continue to go under-owned at his price.
Slowly getting there. He's got to get some more points, and we're in business, man.
Especially last game, I was like, this is a Pfeiffer game right now.
But those are my type of games. Like, I love those games. Those are the games that I used to have on my point guard in my career for NBA, where I would have all the assists, all the stocks, and not score because I'm such a passive player.
You don't attempt a shot for like three quarters. That, like, I tweeted about it, but like, that was a vintage Draymond Green, like, Hall of Fame performance. Like, six steals, four blocks, 15 assists. Like, he didn't care to score. I mean, seven turnovers, sure, but that's definitely wiped out by the impact he had elsewhere. This is a very, very solid matchup against the San Antonio team that is not as strong defensively. They're pretty weak on the interior. Like, I want to say LaMarcus Aldridge's potential absence, or has he already been ruled out?
He's already ruled out.
Would change things on the glass, but like, he's getting like 2-3 rebounds a game this year, so it's not like that does much. But they also play at a faster pace than we've been accustomed to over the last handful of seasons. With Wiseman out, Looney out, I love Draymond Green regardless, but if Eric Pascal is ruled out as well, he becomes a core play for me. I got him last slate at 6% ownership on DraftKings, and it like blew my mind at 6K flat. I have a hard time seeing him be higher owned than Steph Curry, and if we're projecting Steph Curry for 10 to 15%, that is golden for Draymond Green.
Yeah, and Draymond's back to starting at the 5 too, so we like that for fantasy.
Absolutely.
If Pascal's back, maybe they play more Pascal at the 5, but Draymond's still going to start there. If Pascal's out, any Toscano Anderson at 4,500, he's played huge minutes the last two games, 40 and 34 minutes. 40 in the blowout, but then came right back and played 34 in a close game. Not going to have a ton of usage, but with Golden State going so small, he has 18 rebounds over the last two games.
I think I could get there depending on my construction. Like if Pascal comes back, I would probably see Toscano Anderson revert back to the game we saw before the Dallas game when he played Boston, saw 27 minutes, because obviously Golden State is still going to be forced to go small with Pascal or Draymond at the 5, which means he'd probably slide down to the 4 at times. So I definitely could see myself getting there. I would just obviously like him a lot more if Pascal sits.
For San Antonio, like I mentioned, LaMarcus Aldridge already ruled out. DeMar DeRozan has been back to being more aggressive on offense the last couple games, 19 and 16 shots. He's been at 30 real points in each of those games. The peripherals have been there, so he's been really strong. We know his usage rate's relatively high with Aldridge off the floor. And the Spurs have been playing a little bit faster this year, but this is still a massive pace-up spot against Golden State. What do you think about San Antonio?
I love DeMar DeRozan in this game. I still think 7,700 on DraftKings is a very fair price. I'm willing to pay $8,100 for him, which is his price on FanDuel. Him sliding down to the 4 has made him much more productive from a peripheral, specifically a rebounding perspective this season. So that obviously is a massive strength. And the price is ridiculous. Like, this is one of the most fair prices on the slate in this matchup. Draymond could give him fits, but I don't think he's relied upon so heavily on the offensive end where I don't think it would really matter. Outside of DeMar DeRozan, I definitely like DeJounte Murray. I was pretty bearish on him when Derek White originally came back because I wanted to see how Pop would play the minutes out. Because, I mean, you remember last year, like if Derek White was active, DeJounte Murray had to like pull tooth and nail to get 30 minutes. I feel a bit more confident, and you know, some of it might have to be from the fact that Lonnie Walker's been out, so Derek White has been playing more too. But he's seen 30-plus minutes in the last two games. This is a great spot for a perimeter defender like himself against Steph Curry. I think $6,800 is a very fine price to pay for DeJounte Murray, so he is another player that I do not mind. In addition to Derek White, is totally fine at $5,100 too without Lonnie Walker.
All right, let's go to the next game, Cleveland at the Phoenix Suns. Larry Nance going to be out for a few weeks as he is undergoing surgery to address a fractured finger on his hand. Kevin Love obviously still out. Jay Crowder is questionable, didn't play on Sunday against Boston, where Devin Booker finally got some assists, 11 assists for Devin Booker out of nowhere. He finishes with just under 48 fantasy points, 18, 11, and 7 for him. That was pretty out of nowhere. Cameron Payne also going to be questionable as he didn't play on Sunday either. What do you think of that with Booker? I mean, 7,400 is at a price where
I feel bad. Like, it kind of sucks that now we're at a point where we see Devin Booker put up 48 FanDuel points, or excuse me, fantasy points, and we're like, oh, that was surprising. Like, that's something he was doing regularly last season. Obviously, different landscape of the team this year, but $7,400 is a price that I would be okay paying. My only issue, you know, I brought it up with Fred VanVleet. There are other options that we've already talked about in this price range in much more appealing game environments that I would rather play. Like, these are two of the slowest paced teams in the NBA. Two of the better defensive teams. I never thought I'd say that about the Cleveland Cavaliers. So props to Adam. You have to be thrilled. I don't know. You've probably, I think it seems like something you might have manifested, because I don't know any other reason why that team is so good defensively.
Sexton's been better. It was a train wreck last year, and Isaac Okoro has been really good.
Isaac Okoro's phenomenal.
I was looking at, I forget what it's called, but like the you know those graphs, and they show the player's picture, and if it's on the far right, it means they've been that impactful. Isaac Okoro's right up there among the rookies this year, and it's obviously been because of his defense, because the guy is, you know, he's averaging like 7 points a game, like under two assists. Like, he's been great defensively, so that's helped.
Yeah, So I do project this game. Like, what did you say the total for this game was? It was under 220.
Yeah, I think it's just under 220.
I would still probably feel comfortable taking the under. I just, like, this is going to be a game where these teams stress the half court offense. I don't hate Devin Booker at 7,400. I just would probably rather spend my money elsewhere if I'm forced into Phoenix exposure. Cam Johnson has probably been one of my most rostered players of the season.
I've played him a lot too, and
it's a price play. He's just like, well, Phoenix, it's how I was with Royce O'Neal last year.
Yeah, with Jay Crowder out the last two games, Phoenix has started Frank Kaminsky in both games, which is interesting. But when you look at the matchups, they started him against Detroit because they wanted to match Detroit's size with Blake Griffin and Plumlee. And then when I brought up the game by game, I said to myself, okay, they'll probably do it again on Sunday if they're facing Tice and Thompson, who have been starting together much of the season, especially with Jaylen Brown out. They're definitely going to do that, and they did. This could be a game where they could go back to Cam Johnson at the four, because Cleveland's going to start, what, Chetty at the four? Torian Prince.
Or Torian Prince.
So that could be a spot where Cam Johnson can start, but even if he doesn't start, like, 5K, he could play 27, 30 minutes. I'd have interest in him. Like, I think all these prices are interesting. Like, DeAndre Ayton's under 7K. He's going to play 35, 36 minutes if the game's close. Again, Cleveland hasn't been that interior defense we target like in years past this year, but I don't think Drummond – I'm not afraid of Drummond as a defender. And no matter what, who's on the floor, he's going to be around the paint to get rebounds, because, you know, Drummond's taking some threes this year, but they're more like, oh, you're not covering me? Sure, I'll just take a three just because. I have moderate interest in Booker and Ayton, I think, and I do like Cam Johnson.
Ayton is just way too cheap.
And I will say this, where Cleveland struggles, I talk about all the time, is in transition. That's been Mikal Bridges this year for this team, so I would not be surprised if Mikal Bridges had another really solid game today, or Monday, however you want to look at it. Cleveland, bad matchup. Phoenix has been an elite defensive team. The prices on Cleveland, I mean, Sexton at 7,100, not a guy I'm really going to go to against Chris Paul and the Suns. And then you have Drummond at 8,200. That's an interesting price tag. Even if he only plays 32 minutes, we know he can go for 50 in 32 minutes.
Yeah, this is the same price. I believe Drummond was the same price last game, two games ago. It's the first game against Milwaukee. Yep. 38, over 38 fantasy points. Obviously didn't quite get you there, but didn't kill you whatsoever. Price dropped 300 and absolutely smashed to the tune of 48 fantasy points. I will go right back to the well. Like, until he's priced up appropriately, especially because he's seen 30-plus minutes in three of the last four games, I'm totally fine going back here regardless of matchup, because you know he's going to be on the court. You know he's going to get rebounds. You know he's going to get touches. Like, his usage rate on the season, I believe it's still hovering around 30%. Like, that is insane for an Andre Drummond type of player in today's NBA. So I absolutely love the Drummond call. Outside of Drummond, you know, obviously we've gotten used to Larry Nance being out, and he just underwent surgery, so he'll miss again. We should see some more Torian Prince and Jetty. And there's obviously Colin Sexton for 7-1, Darius Garland for 6-2. I can't really say I like the backcourt in this game. You know, Chris Paul.
I'm off Cleveland outside of maybe Drummond in tournaments.
Phoenix is just a really good defensive team. Like, and their best defenders, in I would say Chris Paul and Mikal Bridges, are going to be the ones keying in on both Darius Garland and Colin Sexton. So that takes me completely off.
And then Bridges will
backcourt.
Also be on at times whichever one of those cheap wings you might want to play. And mm-hmm. that's even more concerning considering they are not exactly the players where it's like, oh, okay, good defense, but Chetty Osmond's getting his no matter what. Like it's not Kevin Durant. So, it really is just kind of Drummond and sprinkled in some tournaments for me. I don't think anybody's going to play him. And if he goes for 50 at 6% roster percentage, then you could be in business. And we've seen it happen many times this year.
Yeah, agreed.
All right, let's go to Milwaukee and Denver. Very interesting game. You have Giannis, you have Jokic, and you have Jamal Murray, who's questionable. Jamal Murray missed the team's last game against Sacramento with a knee injury, and Nikola Jokic in a loss, but still said, don't worry, I got us. I mean, 50 points, 8 rebounds, 12 assists, and 3 blocks for one of the three leaders in the MVP race right now. It's just, he's been ridiculous this year. 11-1, it's interesting because he's now the highest priced player on the slate, right? He's more than Jokic, or he's more than Doncic, and he's more than Giannis. But with Murray off the floor, 35% usage, 29% assist rate, 29% rebounding rate, 1.7 fantasy points per minute.
My God.
Ridiculous.
It's like he just goes God mode.
He had 126 touches in that last game.
Which, for reference, the league lead, he's still the league leader in touches over Sabonis, I believe, but he's averaging, what, like 105, 106, or maybe even like 103 per game?
It's almost 104.
He's literally getting like 25% more touches with Murray off the floor. That's absurd. If Murray's out, like, I don't care what the matchup is. Like, Jokic would be arguably the strongest overall play on the slate, but, you know, you have DeMarcus Cousins at center. You have someone like Giannis for a couple $100 cheaper with center eligibility, and we've touched on some others with that same eligibility. I just don't know if my specific roster construction will get me there, and it pains me to know that because I almost want to force him in because I don't assume he will be a high-owned play at 11-1 on a full slate.
You know, it's going to be interesting. I don't know if we're going to have enough value for a lot of people to be able to play Giannis and Jokic in a game stack.
I don't think people will. I personally, I don't know if I've seen enough value to be able to feel comfortable doing that, but like in a tournament, like you throw that together and like round it out with like a value play in Monty Morris. And if obviously assuming Jamal Murray's out.
Morris not like dirt cheap. He's 5,100, but he obviously started in that last game with Murray out, played 35 minutes, had 30 fantasy points, was productive. He'd be like an elite mid-range type of play if Murray's out again. He's just under a fantasy point per minute with Murray off the floor this season. Gets a 2.5% bump in usage. Will Barton also gets a 2.5% bump in usage. He's a guy that I haven't played much this year, but at 5,500, he played 37 minutes last game. He's a guy that contributes in a bunch of different ways. Really good rebounder for the most part. He'd be perfectly fine as a value or as a mid-range play. Michael Porter Jr., I think, would be in play at 6,100. They're all interesting, especially because Gary Harris and PJ Dozier are out too. So, like, their backcourt and their wings are just really shorthanded potentially if Murray's out again. Like, they're going to have Morris and Barton play huge minutes.
Yeah. They also, I mean, regardless of Murray's status, those two are still going to play those big minutes, obviously, because of the absence on the wings. I'm curious. Michael Porter Jr. is one that intrigues me the most. We saw them shuffle up their starting lineup last game on Saturday, I believe, with Jamal Murray ruled out. They inserted Michael Porter Jr. into the starting lineup over Jamichael Green, who had previously been starting. So I believe they started Monty Morris, Jokic, MPJ, Millsap, and who did they start at two? And Barton. They started Barton at two. In that game, Michael Porter Jr. only held a 15% usage rate, 15% rebounding rate, under 0.8 fantasy points per minute. I, in this specific matchup, would almost prefer MPJ off the bench and then have them just reinsert Jamichael Green in the starting lineup. The only issue is that Jamichael Green told the coaching staff he doesn't want to start, so I can't imagine they do that to him. But I think him in terms of MPJ and Will Barton are both incredibly intriguing tournament plays. On this slate, I would trust Will Barton more in cash. Not only because of the safety, but he also comes at a significant discount. Would Murray's presence, like if Murray plays, would that change your stance on either of these two? Or do you think they're just solely affected by the absences of Gary Harris and PJ Dozier?
I think it all helps, but like if Murray's active, what changes? They just, I mean, Murray's going to be a higher usage player than Monty Morris, but Murray just slides in for Morris most likely. I mean, they could start Monty Morris at the two. I don't know if I'd like that matchup here against Drew Holiday, but they could, or they could just keep Barton, because Barton's a guy you wouldn't mind off the bench. He's been more of a bench player, but I don't think it seems like after what you said about Jamichael Green that it's going to impact Michael Porter Jr. the least, which if he's starting at 6,100, we know the upside he has on a given slate when he's on offensively. And he's a guy that takes a lot of threes too. Milwaukee, once again this year, giving up a lot of production from three, so I kind of like MPJ in tournaments regardless.
Yep. Are you automatically running to Monty Morris if Jamal Murray's out?
Define automatically.
Like, would he be one of your top three value plays on the slate? Up to this point, I should say. Yeah. Because obviously there hasn't been much news, nothing breaking.
Yeah.
I think so too. I just think he's, I mean, even with Jamal Murray in, with Gary Harris and PJ Dozier out, he's slid over to the two a handful of minutes. We've seen him above 20 minutes consistently. So he saw 35 minutes last game.
I think he'll play 26, 27 minutes if Jamal Murray's active.
I do too, which makes me really – I mean, I don't absolutely hate him if Jamal Murray's in. Obviously far from a priority, but not someone I would completely X out of my player pool, which makes me – by default, almost like love him if Jamal Murray's out, regardless of the matchup.
Yeah, it's very fair. For Milwaukee, I love Giannis here. I don't know how they defend him at the rim. Denver's allowing a 70.3% field goal percentage at the rim this year. It's the highest rate in the NBA. Giannis is slightly under 11K. I think this game could be competitive in Denver, which means Giannis could play 36, 37 minutes, which means he could go for 70. So I really like Giannis here. I also like Chris Middleton. I know he's been underwhelming in his last couple games, but 7,500 for him against a bad Denver defense is really tough to ignore. I'd rather, I know Drew Holiday's been better lately. Still would rather play Middleton at 7,500.
Oh, so would I. I think 7,500 is too cheap. And, you hit on it. Like, he's been rather underwhelming lately, I guess is the best way to put it. But it's just like you see Middleton at this price and you know what he's capable of. It's very, very hard to get off of him, especially like, Gary Harris, an absolute shell of himself. I'm not saying he is the elite perimeter defender that he once was, but he's still an above average defender. With him out, that obviously helps Middleton. If Michael Porter Jr. starts at the three, Middleton should absolutely feast. Like I mean, they would probably put obviously Monty Morris on. I can see them putting Monty Morris on either Holiday or Dante, going with Will Barton on probably Holiday, and that would cause MPJ to be stuck with Middleton. Like MPJ, literally, he's making incremental improvements, but he literally lost playing time and got yanked in the bubble because of how bad he was defensively while he was putting up like 30 a game. Mike Malone was so fat that he still pulled him because he was so bad defensively. Mm-hmm. So I really like Middleton in this spot, and I will always, I've again, broken record on this podcast with this, but if you're not playing Giannis in a lineup, like it's probably smart to hedge and get Middleton exposure.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't think enough people think of that either. It's like, oh, I don't want to play Giannis in this slate because Milwaukee could score a lot of points and he doesn't have to do as much. But at the same token, that means probably Middleton or Drew Holiday are doing some serious damage. I'm not on Brook Lopez or DiVincenzo. I don't think DiVincenzo's minutes have been down. He was playing like 32, 33 minutes per game to start the season, but hasn't been quite there as of late. Anybody else in Milwaukee?
Not really, no. Like, this is not a game where I'm going to target Bobby Portis because I don't see this game blowing out. As simple as that.
Which means the Bucks will win by 18 and Bobby Portis will have 40 fantasy points in 21 minutes. Should be fun. Let's close it out with Oklahoma City and the Lakers. Thunder is still really banged up. Mike Muscala out with a concussion. Isaiah Roby didn't play over the weekend with a foot. He's out already. He's been ruled out. They did obviously get SGA and Lu Dort back, so that's good. And now Horford should be back after resting over the weekend. So the Thunder, I mean, SGA, 8K.
Yeah, really.
Playing him, but I don't.
The triple double last game.
Yeah.
The thing is, the Lakers are a much, much different matchup than the Timberwolves are. Obviously, we know what SGA is capable of and has in his arsenal, but at 8K, like, it's a fine price. But against the Lakers team, I think I'd rather play Kyle Lowry. I think I'd rather get up to Westbrook, VanVleet, LaVine. I'd rather play Middleton for $500 cheaper against Denver. Just relative to other plays on the slate, he's not going to be a priority for me, even with the Thunder potentially shorthanded. With that said, though, like, yeah, the Thunder are still somewhat shorthanded, but obviously they are expecting Al Horford to play again after he missed last game, right?
He rested.
He rested, yes. That's what I thought. So he's expected back. Muscala is going to be out. Roby's going to be out, but Darius Bazley's still going to be there. They've got a much better play out of Hamidou Diallo. Lu Dort's back. Like, they have, like, their key pieces back, where when I wrote this game up for the Denver Gazette, I think the Lakers were favored by 13.5. That feels a little bit too extreme to me. The Thunder, over the last three games, they're 2-1. They're one loss. They lost by 3 points in their first game to the Timberwolves. They absolutely smoked the Rockets in one of their few games with Oladipo, Wood, and Wall active. I don't see this game getting out of hand to the point where all of these Thunder guys are completely unrosterable. That being said, it's still not a matchup I like want to go out of my way to target. I don't like. I'm looking at the Thunder players right now with their prices baked in. Like, I can't say I love any of them. Like, I really like Al Horford for 6,300. He will have his hands full, as we know, with Anthony Davis, Marc Gasol. I also don't hate Lu Dort at 4,800, but
they're gonna have him play a lot of minutes against LeBron, you'd think.
Exactly. That's why. Like, I mean, obviously it's LeBron James, one of the greatest players of all time. Like, he's not going to trip over himself and have a floor game because of Lu Dort, but like, you take a player like James Harden, Lu Dort has absolutely destroyed, like, not destroyed like from an offensive perspective, but shut down James Harden in their individual matchups. So he's fully capable of holding his own on the defensive end. And this is why, like you said, he's going to get minutes for that purpose. So I like him at 4,800. His offensive inefficiency is just something you're going to have to stomach.
He's been a little bit better this year offensively. You're right. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, his jump shot is just, he has maybe the slowest release I've ever seen on a jump shot. It's not an overly appealing jump shot to the eyes, but he's better at putting it on the floor and driving. And yeah, he's going to play minutes regardless. For the Lakers, I like Anthony Davis in tournaments here, assuming he's active. Again, him and LeBron are quote unquote questionable. We know they're going to play. But, you know, there's a chance he doesn't, but they're going to play most likely. I talk a lot about how the Thunder just can't defend the pick and roll, and that's why I liked Naz Reid. It's why I liked Christian Wood. It's why I liked a lot of guys. And Anthony Davis could absolutely smash them in the pick and roll. Nobody's going to play him. I have some tournament interest in Davis. You can always play LeBron if you want. Is he a top-tier player for me on this slate? No. We talked about a lot of guys under him, and he's priced really closely to Luka and Giannis, so it's hard given the way the Lakers have blown a lot of teams out. Now, they've been playing in more close games lately, and LeBron's been playing more minutes lately, which is why he's been great, and he's always going to be great, but I just prefer the other guys we mentioned. And then, I mean, Dennis Schroeder at 5'7", minutes are there, production's okay, but you're not getting excited about Dennis Schroeder. And then really nobody else is in play for me unless Davis or LeBron are out.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's the same tune we've been singing with this Lakers team since the start of the season. I know now Anthony Davis is obviously $900 cheaper than LeBron. If choosing between the two, I will still go lean towards the side of LeBron, especially with the uptick in minutes we've seen since the end of January.
All right. Anything else from this game?
No, that was we hammered. It's a good slate. The one thing with this slate we're gonna have to watch for is value that opens up, because it's pretty thin from that perspective. But there are enough mid tier plays where we can build some pretty nice lineups.
Yeah, absolutely. Best of luck on Monday's slate. Hopefully your week gets off to a good start. Of course, check out all the content at FTN Daily, FTN Bets, FTN Fantasy. And please, if you can, if you have the time, go on iTunes, give us a rating and a review. Helps us out, helps us get the podcast out there to more listeners, and helps get the FTN community more people and more just awesome community. That's what it's all about at the end of the day. So,
yep.
Super Bowl was kind of whack, but we'll bounce back and have some great NBA action to start this week. Best of luck. Thanks for listening. As always, we'll be back on Tuesday. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode of the FTN NBA Podcast with Adam and Joe. Please subscribe, rate, and review the podcast.